Hi, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson, and we're here tonight in beautiful Salt Lake City on this summer's afternoon, evening. In Studio Fist in Your Face with another beautiful studio audience. Welcome, guys.
All right.
I took a week off last week. Hopefully, you guys didn't burn the podcast down or anything like that. The world does go on without me. All right. So let's jump right in and introduce our panel. First of all, to my left is the ever gracious and kind Robin. Hi, Robin. Welcome back.
Hello. So happy to be here again.
Thank you. It's good to have you. And returning again is I have my Utah syllables all mixed up. Is the emphasis on the first syllable or second? Is it Terrell or Tyrell?
It's Terrell in the first syllable.
Terrell. Okay. Welcome.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. We're really happy to have you back. You did a great job the first time. And of course, our old friend and sometimes nemesis, Rich Rasmussen.
Hello, John.
Hello, Rich. Welcome. Rich's band, I was going to say Whiskey Tango, but that's not it. It's Whiskey Bravo.
Whiskey Bravo.
You've been playing around town, right?
Yeah, we have.
This isn't going to be released till next week. You have any gigs coming up that we can pimp out for you?
We're going to be playing at the Royal. I don't even have the date in mind. But it's too bad because by the time you hear this, we'll have played at Piper Down. That's going to be a show we're really looking forward to.
That's this week. That's on Thursday, right?
This Saturday, yeah.
Oh, Saturday. Oh, I might be able to make it then.
You should. It's my birthday.
All right. Well,
happy birthday. Can I put in a plug?
Rich. Sure.
Oh, maybe. For those who are interested.
The last time somebody said, can I put in a plug?
Didn't turn out well. John.
I'm a little skittish.
Turn something so nice and wholesome into nastiness. That deserves something in the swear jar or the nasty jar. Okay, so. For those who are interested, the Ex-Mormon Foundation Conference is in October, so please go to exmormonfoundation.org and get the information. It's mid-October, and I love to meet new people.
That's here in Salt Lake City, no?
Yes.
Sue Emmett runs that and company, and it's always a fantastic time for those who can come in and make it. Excellent. Thank you, Robin, and good luck. Whiskey Bravo.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that.
Can you get us a cut that we can end this podcast with a
sure.
Randy? You guys all over that? All right. We'll get one on the end here. All right. For our news, we haven't been doing news for a little while. I have a few stories to catch up on. First of all, of course, we covered ad nauseum Kate Kelly and her debacle. Recently the Research Information Division of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, sent out a survey to, I think, 1,000 members in good standing about the role, responsibility, and treatments of women in the church. And the survey also dealt with how these members define apostasy. One of the questions, or the questions, were talking about public issues and controversies, about the church's response, doctrine, and this sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a fairly interesting maneuver after all of, and I think the survey, I haven't seen a copy, so I've only read stories about it, but it specifically referenced things that have happened in the last 6 months. Obviously the church is responding almost real time to things that are going on, which seems sort of odd for a, you know, church driven by revelation. And in all fairness, it's like City Creek. My criticism of the critics of City Creek is City Creek just replaced the ZCMI Center, right? This is nothing new. And the church has been doing these surveys for a long, long time.
When was the last, to my memory, the last big one was the temple changes in 1990. I'm sure there's been one after.
There's been several since then, but yeah, that was a big one, after the 1990 temple changes where they kind of, it happened before that. I think the one that you're referring to, there were probably surveys after, but there was a survey that went around to kind of ask what people were creeped out about.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And there was a survey, I think it might have been after that, about please sew up the poncho. It's really creepy. All the
Right.
Almost the, naked touching.
The poncho of the garment.
Oh, when you the shield. The shield.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm a little far removed. Yeah, so I guess it's sewn up now.
Yeah, for those who aren't familiar, the and this has changed in actually in 2005 again, but the first part of the endowment was what Mormons euphemistically call the initiatory, or what's called washing and anointing, where an individual would go, they would take off all their clothes, so they were naked for this because they'd be clothed in the garment, but they would wear what was called a shield, which, as you described, looks like a big Tijuana poncho, except it's made out of like white polyester. So think of your grandfather's polyester suit, bleached white in the Tijuana stylings.
That's such a good picture.
And you got it. You got it. And then your butt.
But no hood.
But you're bare ass naked. No, right. No hood. You're.
Oh, there's a story about that for me.
But they don't do this anymore. You don't have to be naked anymore as of 2005. But the shield was to protect you as you walk from the locker room over to the washing and anointing room. Now, in the olden days, they had a tub up in Nauvoo, and the men and women were separate, and you would have just disrobed and then stood in the tub and been washed there.
Terrell and I are laughing because we're both of large stature, and those little ponchos didn't cover a lot of our goods, at least mine.
Definitely not cover my goods either.
What are we talking about here? What?
Okay, now we're curious wrong. Here.
No, well, I didn't even realize I was supposed to be naked underneath. I was so confused. That was the weirdest day.
Somebody just walked in right now, and they heard immediately, I didn't realize I was supposed to be naked underneath. I just want to point that out. Yeah, so what were we talking about? Were we talking about surveys?
surveys.
Yeah, so the church is going to find out what the members believe. So, yeah, congratulations to the church. The next story to cover is the intrepid Cliven Bundy down there in he's in Nevada, right?
I think so, yeah.
What's interesting now is he's, of course, been LDS and been in this sort of gangster standoff with the feds in this role of like double incompetence. I'm not gonna go there. But he appeared on KUER, the fabulous Silver Fox Doug Fabrizio, interviewed.
Oh.
Was that a little moan?
He's fabulous.
He is fantastic. But he brought Cliven in and interviewed him, and Cliven cited the 12th article of faith to justify his actions, and Cliven has now escalated this to a holy war on Mormon theology against the federal government. And he said, Cliven said, we are to be subject to kings, presidents, rulers, and magistrates as they honor the Constitution. Now, I had to check my copy of the 13 Articles of Faith, and that clause, you know, it's kind of like under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. It hasn't been inserted quite yet, but I'm sure the Eagle Forum is working on it. And then he added, but if they don't honor the Constitution, we don't have no obligation to So there you go. Yeah, it might turn hot on the grounds of the 12th, the article of faith that says we believe in being subject to government might, in fact, lead the revolution in Nevada. So the question...
The government's going to hang by a thread, right? Maybe that's the Constitution.
Yes, it will. And the elders of Clive and Bundy will save us. So the question here is... You know, the church has done some notable action in the past on liberals who are pretending to speak for church doctrine. I've always noted when I go into Deseret Book that there's a lot of conservative writers and conservative pundits who are not LDS who appear in Deseret Book. I think here you have a blatant example of where, you know, compare Cliven to Kate Kelly and, you know, Kate just wants to sort of be recognized as a human being. And Cliven wants to like drop some slugs and some federales, you know, and he's, you know, he's going to be the passing out the hymn books with the elders quorum next week. Yeah. So the problem church have is when you, okay, I know you guys listen to me and I heard a rumor last week about somebody listening to me who was, I was actually quite surprised though. Hey, let's do lunch. The COB. So the church, if you have a heavy hand, if you discipline all the time, then when you don't discipline, it becomes notable by your absence of discipline. So you can't come in and strictly enforce some things because it will be noted the other things you're not strictly enforcing. So because you're willing to take such action for petty things, when you take no action against Clive and Bundy, it becomes a tacit endorsement. Just write it down, guys. All right. Another free piece of advice from your friend, John Larson. That's the news for the, anything I missed?
No, I want to say it's been a slow week, but that's so much stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The church always has their hands in things, man.
It's all good stuff.
The Mormon Expression Podcast is a listener-supported production. Visit our website, mormonexpression.com, to tip John's swear jar or become a subscriber and help keep the show running. Thank you very much. We can't do it without you.
Okay, well, let's start. My friend Christian, a good friend, he said he sent me a message and he said, there's some people who listen to the podcast who don't want to listen through your announcements and you're starting it like you start the Elders Quorum and the news and just tell us when you're going to start. So Christian, I'm starting now. our topic for today is, what to do if you decide the church isn't true. We've had other podcasts in the past where we've discussed what not to do when you leave the church, and there's lots of those things, and sort of how to handle things. But I kind of wanted to, from my experience, from talking to hundreds and thousands of people who have made the transformation, kind of give you a guideline for how to do this in what I would consider the most painless way. Now, that being said, I was talking to a friend just this morning, you know, dealing with a relative, and oftentimes there's no win scenario. You have to remember that the church has schooled its members from the time they're very, very young to do things that are socially inappropriate, to cross boundaries, say things that they shouldn't say, and to take any sort of pushback in the slightest as a great offense to them. And so, really, most of the conversations you'd have with other people can't be pulled off successfully. It just can't be done. If you make it happen, wonderful. Bless your heart. But I think, you know, keep your expectations set realistically. Okay. So I've got 10 steps. This is a 10 step program. I should have added two more. We should add two more on so we can re-edit it and make it a 12-step program.
Oh, no, that's horrible. I cannot stand 12-step programs. Heaven's sake, to people who make it work, but ew.
Which step do you always burn out on?
I don't burn out, but I don't believe you can truly progress if you acknowledge you're powerless.
Well, that's why we have 10. We drop the acknowledging your divine power or whatever.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. So are you guys ready to start?
Ready.
Yeah, let's do this.
I gave these guys this list like 6 seconds before we started recording the podcast. So if their performance is lackluster, it's my fault. There, I covered your ass.
This is the way you come across looking so good. They don't realize.
Well,
you do anyway. You're awesome. But.
I don't prepare either. Okay. all right. First of all, the question is what to do when you decide the church isn't true. The first thing you got to give up is this fucktard definition of truth that the church uses. It's not real. Okay. And I'm not saying that there's no such thing as truth, or the truth doesn't matter. But when you say a church is true, that's utter nonsense. So I want to point out from the beginning that right there in the premise of this whole podcast is baloney, because there's no such thing as a church being true. And this is part of the reason that the church is hard to leave, because you've bought into this concept that's undefinable and unverifiable, which means it can't be disproven. How do you prove a church isn't true? Like, imagine if somebody's walking around saying the Lakers are true. You would just say, what are you talking about? Did they win? Did they lose? Did they, you know, do they have a full team? Are they on the, you know, it's like, but it doesn't make any sense to say it's true. And the same equally applies to a church. A church is an organization. It's a collection of doctrines and history. And even if it has God at the lead and prophets are real and all that stuff, to say that it's true is still nonsense. Mm-hmm. Right?
And like you're saying, the first thing you ever say as a child, right? You've seen this in sacrament meeting. You go up, I know, you know, the church is true. That's right. The first thing. I love my mom and my dad. But before that, I know the church is true. And that you're right. It's nonsensical. It's cyclical in its own, like, three words. You know, like, it's just weird.
You know what I don't really understand about testimony meetings is why they want to bear their testimony in the name of my son. Cause he's not a real religious guy. And they don't have to, they say thy to mm-hmm. me when I'm there. Last time I was there, they said, I say this in the name of thy son. And.
Oh my gosh, John.
This is the kind of comedy gold that I've been delivering for years now, and it's free because of the wonder of the internet.
Well, and isn't it really informal when it comes down to it? I was trying to explain that to my family.
You mean informal as in informal logic or informal as in, hey, dude?
Well, thou, if you're really looking English. Okay, anyway. That's aside.
Okay, so let go of the illusion. I have a step one. And the illusion is that the church is either true or not true. And it's a bullying definition because what it does is it's forcing you as a member to try to accept everything, as a consequence of that. Well, if the church is true, then Joseph Smith must be a true prophet. The Book of Mormon must be a true book. And you start going through all these binaries. And that's what the church wants. Because what the church wants in this thinking is for you to not get out of the cage. So when you find something wrong, you say, well, the church is true. Mm-hmm. Therefore, men are flawed. So if the bishop makes a mistake, it's not the church making a mistake. If there's a mistake in the book, it's, well, there was a mistake in translation because it's true. Mm. So you have these definitions where things are both true and false at the same time. But they're still defined as true. And I'd say the first thing is that construction can turn you on your head as you leave the church because what your tendency do is to keep it. So now you're going to go walking around like an asshole telling everybody the church is not true, which is equally fallacious, right? It's to say that the church is not true has exactly the same problem in it. Right. And it's just nonsensical.
I was just going to say, just accepting the fact that there, what you've learned, what you've gotten from it, like as far as the moral aspects has some value to you. Maybe not truth completely, but does have some value to you. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
And so from there, you know, accepting that and saying, well, it's not per se not true or it's not completely true, but I have gotten something from it, I think is where I would go.
Absolutely. And that leads to the second point. So the first thing, once you let go of that idea of truth and again, you stumbled onto something to decide that it wasn't what it represents itself to be. Our next step is to study and pray, I put. What you're doing when you're in the church, when you're studying, and I've said this before, as the last year I was in the church, I became utterly amazed at how much studying Mormons do without ever learning anything at all. And the whole study paradigm is defined. Can you imagine anything else in your life that they'd say, read this 10 minutes a day? Not read to the end of the chapter, not read to the end of the sentence, just read 10 minutes a day. Like, it's nonsense, right? Yeah. And it's a nonsensical way to study. So once you let go of the idea that it's true, because when you're studying in the church, what you're doing is you're trying to contextualize everything. That's what studying in the church is finding a way to fit it in or fit it out. It's in the paradigm of truth or it doesn't belong. It's a lie. It's the world. It's Lucifer. It's whatever else.
And that way of studying, it makes it very easy to cherry pick.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So the step two is now you can study and pray and ponder and seek understanding like the Mormons claim they're doing. Now you have the leisure to read whatever you want on your terms.
Yeah. So in the information age that we live in, if you want to find out what kind of car to buy, I mean, and that pales in comparison as to like what kind of destiny you want for yourself or your family. I mean, you do, you open yourself up to so many different resources and so many different, just outlets of information. And so, yeah, think about it. Maybe buying a car is a bad example. Think of it like that though.
No, was it Ballard? I guess I'm thinking it's Ballard because he used to be a car salesman. One of them said, if you wanted to buy a Ford, would you go to the Chevy dealership and ask them? Hells yes, you would. And then you would go look at the internet and you would ask everybody. You don't just ask the dealer.
Anything I search on, I always start with whatever it is, fraud or complaints, and read all of that first. Then you read the positive, and hopefully at some point with your own logic, you can come up with the preponderance.
Yeah, but the goal here is this is completely on you, that you're driving it. You're no longer beholden to that idea of the church is true, and don't fall into the trap of falling in of having to disprove everything in the church.
Right.
The church to me is a human institution, as is everything else, right? So as a human institution with intelligent people, it's going to stumble on, if just by chance, positive things. And I think because of this paradigm, people come out of the church and they say, you know, I feel like the Joseph Smith was a fraud, but the primary is good for my kids, and I have friends in the ward, and this helped me get an education, and it's, I know that I had a friend who was an alcoholic, and it set him on the right path, and they, all these things. And I would say, yeah. Well, why not?
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Exactly. Right?
Mm-hmm. You know, the Church of Satan had fellowship activities, right? Like they got together and drank and howled at the moon or whatever. I mean, there's nothing in the world really that's wholly positive or wholly negative.
Sure. And maybe just a side note on that. This is something I found very interesting and helpful. And just the idea of whatever it is, whether it's a church or anybody making some kind of claim, they're the ones that own the burden of proof. They're the ones – I'm saying that right?
Yeah, exactly.
They're the ones that, since they're saying it, they have to show you how it's true and take them up on that. I mean, that's universal, whether it's the church or your car. I mean, take them up on that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So let yourself – and I've kept throwing the word pray in here. If it works for you, it works for you. Like, it doesn't, you don't have to throw the entire baby out with the bathwater here. It's not a binary. And if, even if you decide there's not a God, you can still keep praying. It works exactly the same, right? I just don't feel rushed. And we'll come back to that in a second. Okay, number three. Let yourself mourn and be happy simultaneously, because you're going to probably need to go through these emotions.
Absolutely.
When you leave the church, for whatever, even if you leave it and stay going, like you leave a fundamentalist view, you leave a, you know, where you accept everything, you're giving up dreams, you're giving up these hopes, you're giving up this pattern of living and this hope for the future, that you're going to have to mourn those dreams to some extent or the other. But you're also happy, because you're not constricted by some of these failings. You know, a lot of people who leave the church feel this great sense of relief, because there are many people, if not most in the church, who believe that they'll never make it to the celestial kingdom, that they'll never be successful. And it's this burden that they're carrying around the whole time, that they're always failing. They're always going to be miserable. And that's a great thing to let go of. And I think people get confused on the fact that these two simultaneous things can exist, and that's okay. It's okay to both despise the church or whatever and miss it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who've gone through a divorce maybe understand this a little bit better, where you have these two simultaneous feelings of mourning this thing you were working on and at the same time moving on to something else. And everybody's going to experience this in their life if they don't leave the church. They're going to leave a career that they devoted a lot of time to. They're going to mourn the death of a friend. They're going to have, you know, they're going to get cancer. There's going to be something. And it's okay to feel those things simultaneously, and you don't have to rush through them. And I think the critique that I give of the ex-Mormons is trying to prove to themselves and everybody else how happy they are, mm-hmm. and how there's nothing sad about this. That they act like they've won the fucking lottery, and it's okay to realize that this sucks. It's not fun to lose your identity and your sense of self, right. especially if you're manifested for a lot of years.
I was going to say, for most people, I mean, I'm a convert to the church, so I didn't have that connection at the very beginning. But for most of the people who join the church at, you know, from birth, it's like they have spent their whole entire lives with this religion. I mean, everything wrapped around it. So like it's a child. It's like it's part of who you are. And so definitely I agree in the sense of mourning. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry, a little bit frustrated with the church at that point and say, hey, you know, like – I felt a little, you know, like you've been dishonest to me a little bit, you know, you've completely broken my heart, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that is, it's okay to mourn, like you were saying. So.
And I think it's okay to acknowledge problems, because I think some people, especially with their, believing family members, are nervous to admit, you know, I'm the same person in basically as I was out. I have the same failings, the same challenges, the same, but it makes you nervous because knowing in the church that sometimes you're expected to fail now that you're not in the church. So, you know, maybe come up with what you'll say to your family. Life is still life.
Well, and on that point, you probably will have new problems. You're going to do or say something drunk sometime that you're going to regret. I promise you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's true that Mormonism will keep you from doing that.
Right.
And there I've been around long enough to know that there are Mormons. There are people who are stalwart Mormons who left the church and become alcoholics. There are people who – I was contemplating this the other night. I am for sure that if I had never left the church – My first marriage would still be intact. But that doesn't mean that's the right thing. Now, if you frame marriage as saying success of a marriage is longevity, period, which is what our culture does, right? Mm-hmm. That when somebody says, "Oh, I've been married 45 years," we say 45. Was it good? You know, we don't want to ask. Is that a good thing? Right. We just immediately start cheering. Woo! You did it. You know, you survived. But there will be things that happen after that the church would have solved for. So what? It takes a long time. It took me a long time. It took me years to own that I felt an extreme pressure to be successful and to show people that being outside the church wasn't detrimental in any way to my life. But it is. It is detrimental in some ways. But for me, the benefits outweigh the benefits of staying in by a long shot.
And there's no way you can see that until you've gone through that journey, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how many, you've seen so many more people than I have, John, but I don't know if we've kind of used the word, it's okay to mourn. It's okay. I almost think it's necessary. It's healthy.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's healthy.
It's unavoidable.
I agree.
And absolutely. And it's great to feel elation in the morning and, you know, feeling terrible about the whole thing in the evening, and that's okay. That's normal. Mm-hmm. And it's like you say, it's healthy, and it does get better over time.
Definitely.
But it's just the point three is free yourself up just to feel these things, even if they seem contradictory.
Well, I think basically what we've been talking about is acknowledging the impact on your life. And I think kind of what we pair along with that, which is one thing I'm learning from you, John, is also acknowledge the impact on your family members and those around you. So not only be gentle with yourself, but try to be gentle with them as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so this leads to my next point, which is relax. It all doesn't matter. And what I mean by that is one of the ways Mormonism controlled us is by having all of these things that mattered, right? And so you could be 100% home teacher, visiting teacher, go to all your meetings, pay your tithing, keep all the commandments. But if you didn't do your genealogy, there were people on the other side suffering, and you would be going to the terrestrial kingdom because you were not a valiant servant, right? And there was just hundreds of these things, right? And the great thing about what you to do inside the church is true. Now, keep in mind, to go back to the top of this list, this isn't what to do once you leave the church. This is when that epiphany comes on you. Now you can suddenly relax. You're able to go through and say, I don't have to do all those things. Because there's so much as a Mormon that you're trying to do and trying to be successful at. And it's just so wearing on you. If you go through a crisis of faith and return, you're going to be a rock star. They're going to love you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a favorite speaker. And if you don't, you won the lottery. So either way, it's great. And you can take this time as a time to breathe. When I first had a crisis, my first crisis of faith, when I was first going through it, I mean, for real, I had many, many, many crises of faith as I grew up. I felt, and I didn't even realize this till later, I felt a strong drive, if the church wasn't true, to figure out what was true. And what I realized later, and I don't know where I got this, and maybe none of the rest of you have this, but there was some narcissistic element way down in my psyche that had me believing that my belief in something, my sincere belief in something, made it true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely Mormonism 101.
Yeah, so, especially if you get warm fuzzies.
So it's like when I was struggling with whether or not I believed in the afterlife, I didn't. But I didn't like that. I wanted to believe in the afterlife. But the epiphany came when I realized that the afterlife either exists or doesn't exist completely independent of my narcissistic musings, right? There's no thought that I could have that would make the afterlife either exist or not exist. And while it was this path that made me feel peace, like if I could just solve this problem, if I could just figure it out myself, then suddenly the universe and its meaning would fall into shape. Bullshit. If the universe has a meaning, you're either comprehending it or not comprehending it. It has no consequence on anything. And I just tell you this just to realize that your belief or lack of belief in the church neither makes it true or false. The church, on the other hand, wants as many people to believe it as possible because in their paradigm, that makes it true. The more people they can parade around in the I'm a Mormon commercials makes it more true, and it's simply not true.
Yep. Amen.
Yep.
The next step five, I think, is highly related to my relax one, and which is, realize that you now are on your own schedule. There's no hurry. And I have this as number five, but when people come to me and say, they say to me, I just found out, I can see the anxiety, and my answer is always, there's no hurry. You got all the time in the world. You don't have to decide anything anytime soon.
Yeah.
We're relating to the relax and no hurry. You're calling all the shots now. You're in charge. So advice like, if you don't want to have your callings, just go to the bishop and say, I am going to do my calling for the next 30 days and then I'm out. You don't ask him. You tell him, right?
Or you could just say no.
You can say no.
If they ask you for a calling.
And you can say, I need to think about it, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to, those in my generation went through MTC, learned the commitment pattern, which is trying to force people socially to make decisions, to construct a socially awkward situation that forces somebody to make a commitment one way or the other, knowing that they don't want to say no, they'll say yes. It's complete.
Here's a perfect example. Like, we're going to be back in your neighborhood this Saturday between 2 and 3. Is 2 better or 3 better for you?
Yes. It's the same. It's a
ooh.
No joke. It's exactly the same thing that's in the How to Raise a 3-Year-Old books. They give a child the illusion of control by offering them two choices, of which you're fine with them choosing either one.
Yes, love and logic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, how you were saying number one as far as that idea, John, I absolutely agree. And as a victim advocate, where I dealt in that line of work for about 12 years, that was number one. Like when you have a trauma of some sort is, you know, actually saying, you know, don't make any really big choices right now. You know, give yourself a chance to cycle through that trauma because you may find that that isn't the choice you want to make over the long run. One thing I can think of that seems to be pretty common with people who have left the church is some people go out quite quickly and get tattoos. And which, of course, I have no problem with tattoos. But I have some friends who loved and picked out tattoos. They were really excited to go get them, but happened it took a little longer than they expected to go get the tattoo and never have 7 years out. And so I'm guessing that as she had time to sit with it, she changed her mind. So just give yourself a chance. See if you still want that tattoo in 3 years or a year.
Yeah, I've seen more than one person on the element of tattoo who got a tattoo that was kind of smarmy and attacking the church. And I've seen those and I'm like, oh, that looks nice. You're going to hate that in 10 years. Because every time you look at it, it's going to be this visceral, you know, real reminder of this segment of your life that you kind of want to move on from. Yeah. And I think that, don't hurry. I'm not even thinking so much on the things you want to rush out and do. Like go to a titty bar or something. I'm more thinking about things like you don't have to make these decisions inside the church very fast. You don't have to rush out and tell everybody. Cause there's this, we've talked many times about the ex-Mormon tendency to promiscuous disclosure, which is a reflection of the Mormon control of information. Like you have to tell everybody everything, and home teachers and bishops and bishoprics will ask you inappropriate questions. And you suddenly have control over that again. You don't have to tell anybody fucking anything. Mm-hmm. It's none of their business. And they can't ask you and bully you around, which leads to number six, which is regain your own privacy and boundaries. I was talking to a friend recently who was talking about a close relative they were going through issues with. And the thing went through my mind is this is just nuts. Like that this person would ask these questions or say these things. And once you start detaching from the church, you're going to see this all around. This is one of the reasons that ex-Mormons tend to move away from these relationships because Mormons have very poor boundaries. Mm-hmm. And
like how many neighbors would get away with, like in a different context, with asking you what kind of underwear you wear or if you wear them day or night?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's okay to not answer some of these questions. Okay to set boundaries. And, you know, I oftentimes on the forums or whatever, people who are fresh out, they'll say, the executive secretary just called me and the bishop wants me to come over on Thursday and interview him. What do I do? It's like, what do you mean, what do? You hang up the phone. You don't answer it. You say, well, if he wants to come over to my – this is my favorite answer. Yeah, he can come over on Friday. We'll be having some drinks. You just – you don't, because you're into those patterns so much that you really have to push back on all those. And I give you permission to tell white lies. You can tell anybody that you have a date with me and I'll back you up.
Well, John,
I've used that twice, John.
Twice. You've been out at least four
really
times.
Good time.
Yeah, I lied the other.
But it's okay to say, no, I'm busy. Because it's, and you want to give them, you want to push it back in their face, but they don't understand. You know that, what's that, movie, the parody of Star Trek?
Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest. Where the, I'm going to butcher it, but there's a group of people, there's an alien civilization that they have an inability to tell any lies, right? And so another one comes in and says, when you talk to them, you have to talk to them as if you're talking to a child. And in social situations, when you talk to Mormons, you have to talk to them as if they're children. And this is, I'm not being a dick right now. I'm real.
Yeah, you are.
This is really honest because they don't have any kind of social bearing on this front and they don't know how to interact. And you kind of have to just push back and they won't understand is my point. Mm-hmm. If you try to do normal, polite, demurring, they won't get it. They're not good on subtlety. So you're okay to lie. I give you permission.
Well, John, one thing I've found that is really helpful with all sorts of inappropriate questions or things that are very personal is simply to say, why do you ask? With curiosity, you don't need to have any assume why they're asking, because very often when someone will ask, there may be, maybe they're curious. If they say, oh, why did you leave the church? Well, why do you ask? Well, because I've had some doubts and I really would like someone to talk to. I mean, you don't.
It could work. Right. With rational people.
But it lets you know. And then a lot of times if they are overstepping boundaries, then they go, oh, yeah, why do I ask?
I found that any kind of, in my experience, and I don't think your advice is wrong with normal people.
hey, but how can they be normal if someone doesn't start treating them
normal? The best thing, you remember that woman that you grew up with at church who talked to everybody like they were six and everything was special? That's what you need to become. So whenever anybody comes to you and says, you know, we realize that your child's going to be turning eight and we'd really like them to come out and see the baptism of their peers. And you say, oh, that's so special. That's so precious. We'll see what we can do. Thank you so much for inviting me. We love you guys. Sure appreciate you.
Okay, that does sound a little bit fun. But at some point, show them respect and speak to people like adults.
You're speaking them in their language. You don't go to Zanzibar and speak French. You go there and do what the Romans do, right? Or did I mix my metaphors again? It's okay to Mormon them in their speaking. Just praise the hell out of them and don't give them any commitment. But make sure to tell them how special everything is, you know? Yeah. If they bring brownies, don't say, why put my fucking name on the no contact list? You just say, oh, that's so sweet. How's Freddie? Bye now. Bye-bye.
Next time I want banana bread. Thank you.
I have to say, go ahead. I was going to say, for me, I've had a recent experience with this. I was an executive secretary in a BYU ward. So here's where, John, I see what you're saying, doing the polite thing, but at the same time, when you're dealing with your peers, you can be direct. So I was actually over a friend's house, as a matter of fact, drinking, and I got a text on my phone. Now, this is the like third or fourth text I've gotten this, and they're saying, oh, Trev, we'd like you to come in. We were wondering why you have been so distant. And we want we noticed that you've moved your records out of our ward. So we were wondering what's going on and everything. And I was just like, listen, I know that you are the stake executive secretary. I had the same position. You are getting told to do these things. Listen, leave me alone. Like, just tell them, like, stop. and eventually they'll get it. They really will understand. You could be nice about it. You could say it in a respectful way to them, but eventually just be upfront and be like, no, that's just something that I won't be doing. I won't be meeting with that individual.
Oh, yay, Terrell.
you're absolutely right. And
I get what you're saying, because probably in the home ward, it's a little different. But when you're in a student ward, and if you're a student, definitely the whole concept of like revelation and oh, the spirit tells you this, you can definitely just come at that like straight with them.
I think you're right. That's the better way to do it. The point I'm trying to make in a roundabout, sort of convoluted, retarded way is that,
John.
when I'm saying you, honor your own privacy and boundaries is oftentimes they'll use these things again to be intrusive. And right. I'm just saying it's okay to set up a boundary of yourself around that. And if that's talking firm,
right,
then that's the more adult way to do it.
Exactly.
If it means just kind of in a polite way saying that's none of your business, that's okay. You don't owe them any answers or any explanation. A lot of people feel like they have to, and I mean, to this point, the executive secretary calls you up and say, will you meet with the bishop on Thursday? Nope.
Exactly. Exactly. And see, I knew that. And I was like, no, I'm not meeting with the sick president.
You don't have to explain to him why. Why not?
And it drives them nuts, too.
Right,
They're over the phone like, why?
If you can last more than 5 seconds of silence with anybody trying to do their calling, like, it's gold. It's gold. Like, that's the game I played. Someone would say something, like, it would work in this scenario, too. And I would just follow up with silence, but I would give them this look, right? I don't know, this won't translate well over the radio, right? But like, they'd say, like, ask me a question, like something silly, you know, like invite me back to church or something. There you go. Anyway.
Elder, have you had any problems with self-abuse?
Oh my God.
Works every time.
And then, you just go, and in my head, I'm saying, because that's such a ridiculous, and in your head, it's the same thing, because that's a ridiculous thing to ask somebody on a normal plane. There's got to be a follow-up statement on your end, right? So on my end, I just wait for the follow-up statement, like in all cases, if this makes sense. I'm kind of
absolutely.
So I'll give you the
sense.
Translation for what Rich did is he cocked his chin up a little bit, raised his eyebrows, paused, and then squinted.
He really did. That was
very
accurate.
Really good.
Very accurate.
And then I assume that, because I've actually got this from Rich, so I know what comes next, is you just slightly
shake your head in disapproval.
Go ahead.
Going along with this point and the previous point, when me and my husband were going through our kind of final crisis of faith, we kind of felt like we were engaged. We felt like we did kind of have a deadline because, like, temple, no temple, like, what are we going to do? And everyone's looking at us like, so, like, what about those plans? And we're just like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? And we felt like we had to make a choice immediately. Otherwise, you know, what would happen? But then after a while, we just thought, like, wait a minute. We really don't have a deadline. We don't have to do anything that we don't want to do. We don't have to explain anything to anyone else, even family members, whoever is going to be there. Is going to be there, and whoever is not, and that'll actually probably make it better than right. before with people that are kind of, you know, rather than people trying to slip weird Mormon stuff in there, they just don't have to come at all. And so really, even if you do feel like you have this deadline, like some big life event is coming up or something, you know, you feel like you do have to say something to other people or prove something, you really don't, because your life is your life, and it took a lot of thinking to realize that that was an option, because, you know, in Mormonism they teach you that it's not. You always have to explain yourself, because what are other people going to think of this Mormon not doing something on the straight and narrow?
You're absolutely right. And when I say you can take back your own set of rules or whatever, I mean it, which means if you're in your situation, you're trying to decide whether or not to stay in the church and you have a temple marriage, go ahead and fuck. Because what you do is you get married in the temple,
John.
Which, of course, 25 to 50% of everybody who goes to the temple did already. Then you wait 5 years or till after you've had your first baby, and then you confess. They're not going to do a damn thing. And the trick to confessing, and you can confess whatever you want, you just need to wait enough time. And I'm going to put an actuary table up on the Mormon Expression website, which will have the sin and the amount of time you have to wait before you confess said sin to get full absolution and no disfellowship as a servant. I mean, man, I'll print it up in a little card that people can put in their scriptures in seminary.
Oh my God.
It'll be right next to our online store that says, our bumper sticker that says, just go ahead and fuck.
Like go ahead.
Oh, John, you worried me. I thought you meant other people without an agreement with your partner.
No, that's a different podcast. All right.
Polyamory.
All right. Let's see. Regain your. Okay, number 7. Now we're getting into the last important ones. Take responsibility for your own life immediately. Seize that. Because it's easy to fall in the paradigm of saying – Well, I didn't get an education because, you know, the church said I should be a stay-at-home mom, or I didn't go to grad school because I had to support my kids. These things are all true, and I don't mean to belittle those things, but they're all in the past. And the more you let the church and what it did and how you react to the church in your past define your present, the less happy you're going to be in your present. And the world is your oyster, especially today. You can do anything you want, and you just have to, like, grab a hold of it.
Absolutely. Like, underlined, and, like, that is such an important point. I think taking responsibility for your actions, for yourself, is one of the basic requirements of maturing.
Yeah.
You know, and whether you're 18 moving out of a house and you're leaving an organization and you've got to all of a sudden take responsibility for yourself, or you're 40 and you're leaving the church, or you're 80, you're going to go through that, and you really don't start living that part of your life until you make that commitment to yourself. And it's hard because you're the bottom line, but also it's not worth, I mean, going back and looking at it, it's just so not worth living in the other paradigm.
Well, it's not useful in the truest sense of useful. It may be completely true that you gave up opportunities. You didn't go do things. You didn't travel. You didn't, but that doesn't fix it. And we all have to deal with the hand we have at any given time. And once you learn to accept that, then you can learn to play that hand the best you can. And fixating on the church and how the church screwed up your life just gets you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner that you can take responsibility for it and wrestle that out of control of the church, the sooner you can start doing awesome things.
Right. And you may not be able to recover some of those things that you grieve over.
There's no may about it. If you were in the church for any more than 3 or 4 years, you suffered a loss in your life that you will never get back. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
It's yes, a pound
good point.
Of flesh.
Good point. That. Although, I guess in taking responsibility, what is there a piece of the pie? You may not be able to get the whole pie. Is there a piece of the pie that you can now take advantage of?
Can you use it to your benefit, right?
Yes.
So for example, you may not have finished school when you were 20 because you started having kids when you were 20. But now you're a non-traditional student. So now there might be scholarships, or there's a non-traditional student office. There are resources that are available to you now that weren't available then. Would it have been better for you if you had done it then? Maybe. But now if you're going back to school as an adult, you'll realize, for those of us who've gone back to school as an adult, you realize these kids are all like morons, right?
Right.
And, you know, like when I went back to school older, what I really knew, because I was older, I knew when the teacher was full of shit. So I would tell the other kids, oh, no, he's not serious. He doesn't want to grade those papers on that day. There's no way he's doing it right then. And I was always right. because you start thinking of them as an adult, you know. So I'm just saying there's advantages to other ways. You have life experience and you can take that into new careers and things like that. The experience you learned in the church, like we said in the beginning, isn't all bad. And a lot of these things can be used in new ways. Number 8, reset your relationships. And I would say a huge part of this is discarding the ones that don't work and working on the ones that do. But when I say reset, you're going to have to redefine all of your intimate relationships, every one of them, once you leave the church.
And may I add, give them time.
Yes.
I think that is a really important aspect of this, because the fact that, you know, we may have decided and it may have taken us time too, but think about that. It took us years, for some of us years, to figure this out.
Yes.
And now we're just like, one day we expect them to be fine with it. Well, that may not happen for everybody. That might, for some it might work, but for others it might not. But just give them time.
I agree. And when we take into account everything we've talked about so far, you know, setting those boundaries and that sort of things, is realizing that some of the relationships are going to fall away and it's going to hurt. But some of those relationships, that things were baked in, that I mentioned briefly divorce. I don't know if ex-Mormons have an elevated divorce rate. I would assume that they do based on my observation. And part of that is because the definition of being a Mormon and their relationship was highly configured around their membership in the church. When you change that, the relationship either ends or it redefines itself or it hobbles along in a terrible way for years. So those are your choices. And hopefully you can reset them. You can build your marriage based on common interests and love and affection and your children and your family rather than around the church. And that same thing has to happen with every single relationship. And it's okay to let some of the relationships go, even if they're family members. Now, that doesn't mean you refuse to have Thanksgiving dinner with them, but you realize which ones to put energy into and which ones not. And those can change. I've heard these stories from people who've left the church and their brother or sister was a colossal asshole around it, and they probably were an asshole too. But 10 years later, this person who they thought would have never left the church leaves the church, and suddenly they bond over Mai Tais in Puerto Rico, you know? So It can happen. I've never been to Puerto Rico, and Mai Tais are overrated. All right. Number 9, find what matters to you. And this is one I harp on all the time. And if you've listened to the podcast, you hear me say this a lot. But you find something other than the church or not being the church or bringing the church down or helping other people leave the church or going back to the church or helping the church realize that women are equal or helping the church realize that homosexuals are our friends and have great fashion sense or whatever it is that you want to
thank you
do. You know, no stereotype too small for the Mormon Expression podcast. But find out what matters to you. And I just think that's key. And it might exist in the church. It might be genealogy. Maybe you love genealogy. Great. You don't have to throw it away.
Yeah. I imagine that can be a challenge once you leave the church, because the church, you know, you have this whole world of things that you do and what you're told is important to you. I'm trying to think of it myself. I kind of jump from important things or things that I consider important. But yeah, that must be difficult. I bet you that there's lots of people that are out there thinking like, yeah, what is it that I like to do?
This is the big problem.
On a Sunday because you have your 3 hours back.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you have a whole day.
I know.
And a weekend because you don't have to jam all your cleaning into Saturday. Do you remember how exhausting weekends used to be?
Oh, my gosh.
They were terrible.
Yeah, Saturday was the special day.
It was Sunday.
And then I remember while I was at BYU, there was a rumor saying that you shouldn't do your homework on Sunday as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I had that too.
Oh no.
All right. Number 10.
Let's just say I didn't follow that one.
Number 10 is sort of accumulation of all of this stuff. And I kind of added it here as a review. Phase out what doesn't work and enhance those things that do. Oftentimes you feel this pressure to make decisions, to decide if the afterlife is true, to figure out which friends are really your friends, you know, which people are going to love you no matter what, to figure out, you know, what you're going to do on Sunday, to figure out what all the ways of fraud. It's just phase it out. Just discard the stuff that's not working. Find the stuff that works for you and build on that. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go back to this point when you decide the church is not true and you're still going to church, if you take that philosophy, I am going to slowly phase out the things that don't work for me and I'm going to enhance things do. You'll arrive at a healthy place. I guarantee you're going to phase out home teaching pretty damn quick. But you don't have to make that decision on the same day that you decide the church is not true. It can come bit by bit. And I think a lot of us felt this compulsion to really move fast on some things I did, on others I didn't. And I don't regret anything I took slow. It took me a long time before I even took a sip of alcohol. It took me a long time before I took off my garments. I used to swear when I was a Mormon, so luckily I didn't feel that pressure, and those things are ones that didn't cause me a lot of bumpiness, you know.
John, wanted to do a little bit when you were talking about, I guess, taking your time, that with visiting teaching, I had some really, I guess, awesome gals, and so when I decided to leave, I let them know, you know, I set my boundaries, you know, I don't want to give lessons. I don't want to pray. And I recognize you aren't here for me, you know, wholly. So if it's okay with all of you, I'd like to keep coming with you. I would like to keep having visits without prayer or lessons, as long as, you know, that works for you and you're willing to do that, which they all were wonderful. So I kept with staying involved with visiting teaching in that way. And about the year mark, I called them all and said, you know, thank you so much. I'm good now.
That's okay.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, your visiting teachers are people. And this goes to that they can still, you can have friendships with people in the church, you know, and it's okay. It's just amazing how the church co-opts everything and puts its stank all over everything. And you know, once you start hosing that stuff off, it's not all bad. But some of it just goes down the drain.
Oh my gosh. Keep going, John.
Oh my gosh.
I just make myself laugh sometimes. You know, I just have to sit back and appreciate.
Yeah. Take a moment.
Yeah, so bottom line, there's no hurry. Don't feel any rush.
And can I add something to that?
Please.
There's no hurry to tell people too.
Oh, please, yes, go on. This is important.
It seems like people are always, you know, you mentioned it at the beginning, John. You were saying, you know, you don't have to just become an extremist. Be like, I have to tell everyone now. You know, that's one of the hardest things for me, you know, especially telling people that, hey, I'm no longer active in the church. It's so difficult because you hang out, let's say you're out with a friend that you know is really, really active. There will be a time, I felt like there was a time for me to kind of tell my friends slowly but surely, hey, you know, I'm actually not attending church at all. It's been about, you know, 3 months or so. And sometimes you'll get, of course, that'll be the time to kind of react. You know, you'll be able to fill that out, but there's no rush to being like, all right, I decided the church isn't true. Tomorrow I have to tell everybody, you know, I have to announce this on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So
if you get outside of Utah in this culture, or other fundamentalist cultures. I mean, the Jehovah Witnesses and the evangelicals and Pentecostals are all the same. What you'll realize out in the real world is you'll have friends, sometimes friends you've had for a lot of years, and you won't have any idea what they believe about religion. Matter of fact, when I moved to North Carolina, we had some friends, and he had been a Catholic, rather staunch Catholic. And he had left the Catholic Church. So he kind of got where we were coming from. We got where he was coming from. His wife, though, was nothing. And she was raised that way. She wasn't an atheist. She was just nothing. And so if you asked her, I thought it was fascinating. I would say, well, you know, when did you decide you didn't believe in anything? And she would just screw her face up and, I don't know. And I'd say, what did your parents teach about religion? And she would, We didn't talk about it. And so this is a normal thing that you can have intimate relationships with people and not know what they believe about any of the gods, right? and it's okay because we feel this Mormon compulsion to say so we suddenly don't believe. Like we have to tell everybody that. Everybody needs to know exactly where we stand all the time, on this stuff. And it's not necessary. And believe it or not, I know you don't believe it, but if people who interact with me not in the auspice of the podcast, they don't know what I believe about religion unless they go and Google me because I don't share that. And I won't get sucked into those conversations either. They can be sitting there talking about it at the table and I'll just be eating my burrito. Because I don't think it's appropriate. You aggressively or passively aggressively record it on a podcast and then push it out to the world. You know.
Oh, John,
that's appropriate.
here's a little tip too. If you find that you have to confront the issue, because that happens, you know, you'll be here's the reason why. Like I don't, whatever. As hard as you push, you kind of set the parameters for as hard as you'll get pushed back on it.
Yes.
You know, so if you send this big email to your family and your extended family and it's just this, you know, slandering, like there's 45 points and I had this. I didn't write the For me, I constructed it in a quiz. You guys can all take it. but I didn't, you know, I didn't really send that, didn't do anything like, not really. I absolutely didn't. But, and I'm glad I didn't because, yeah, you push hard, you get pushed hard back because people, you force them to deal with you, you know, rather than allowing them to kind of adjust to the way that you're adjusting, you know, because you don't know what you're going to be.
Yeah.
Excellent point, Rich.
And oftentimes people just don't like thinking about these things. So even if it's not about you, you're putting them in an uncomfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that's not the first time you've said, here's a little tip to me.
Second date.
Thanks. Thanks. I'll be here all night. All right. Any other thoughts on?
So I'll just say this because it's been burning a hole and we keep on revisiting it and I'll leave it alone. But if you're going to take away anything, I think the message, and you'll see this online, the mantra is go slow. If that's all you can remember for all of this, what did John say about, you know, drinking Mai Tais or no, just go slow. Like that's the big takeaway. And that here's another little tip for you, John. That was an epiphany for me.
Okay, now it's the swear jar.
So basically, think of it like this. In almost any interaction where there might be perceived conflict or it's just not sitting right with you, almost always there's a variable of time. And it's almost – sometimes it's the only variable that you actually can control. But it's very infrequent in life that, oh, you know, I just don't have control over time right now. So just take a minute, think, breathe. Don't send the share message. Don't forward the email. Don't do that stuff. Just think. Anyway, there you go.
And if you can't hold yourself back, get a therapist so you can hold on to it and then share it in a more appropriate setting.
Yeah. And there are like closed Facebook groups and different ways you can find community and go to the coffees or the local post-Mormon groups, whatever, and vent there. And that can be really cathartic and helpful. But, you know, whenever anybody comes onto one of those groups and says, should I put this on my Facebook main feed? The answer is always no.
And right. I was going to add for the LGBTQIA, et cetera, community, just understand that you have a lot to kind of think about. So going back to what everyone has said, go slow. Okay. Separate, first of all, your sexuality with the religion. And then once you've dissected and you felt like the religion is not there either, accept that, accept who you are completely, and then kind of figure that out. That's going to take a while. It is not something that you could just do overnight. It is not something that is easy to do. It's going to be very hard. So understand that aspect as well. But I do appreciate these 10 steps because they do go through the process. At least for me, they went through the processes that I went through when I was figuring things out.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you to the wonderful panel, and good luck out there leaving your religion. I guess it'll be okay. It'll be great. I one time read that they were talking about stress, this study on stress, and they said that that people recovered to normal for a lot of stressful situations, like if you got amputated, you know, it took you 4 or 5 years, but you recovered back to normal in terms of happiness. The only thing you didn't recover from is a commute. People never adjust to commuting to work. So at least this isn't commuting to work. You will adjust from this. All right. Thanks, everybody. And good night.
All right. I want to welcome my friends for Mormon Expression. Thank you for coming along. This song is called The Ride. It's about living through some of these trials that we've been talking about tonight. We're the band Whiskey Bravo. It's a brand new song.
Before light, form your eyes, a mother's love you felt deep inside. At 6, learned magic tricks, and when 9, you felt the tide. Into the sea go, says I, we're braver than me, set sail to die. Underneath not give to fear atop a slide. Falling, falling, enjoy the ride. Falling, falling, enjoy. I'll not pretend to know. We do not know. I'll not pretend to know. We do not know. Living today, else why? Cannot fear what ahead us lies. Living today, else why? Into the sea go, says I. We're braver than beasts and sail to die. Underneath hills the earth collides. I'll not give to fear atop a slide. Falling, falling, enjoy the ride. Falling, falling, enjoy the ride. Falling, falling, enjoy the ride. Falling, falling, enjoy. Go.
Hope you enjoyed that. Check us out on Facebook. We're Whiskey Bravo.